Okay, welcome everyone for the weekly English medium discussion. We have about 1 hour for the discussion. We have our appointed topic, traditional one. And before going to the topic, if anyone is having any comments or any reports, we will take a few minutes to start with the discussion.
Avasarai Banthe. We have not received any reports for today's session, Ante.
So that means we can start with the today's topic, Chula Viva Sutta. So I would invite Venerable Uddarakkhita to present today's version for the discussion, please.
So again, we are continuing with this minor discourse on deployment. So this is, again, just to set the context, the Buddha is asking himself questions. So he's formed a psychic Buddha, a kind of a copy of himself, to pose questions, and then he answers the questions. And the reason he's doing this is for the benefit of the devas, who are his audience. So he wants to ask sophisticated kind of questions to sort of stretch the mind of the devas, because the devas are living in a very good circumstance, good conditions. They don't necessarily have the, shall we say, critical qualities to question their existence, to question what's going on in their existence. So he's doing this by asking himself questions. So this is quite a deep sutta. It's the Buddha asking himself deep questions for the benefit of very capable people. So he asks this question of himself again. But why do they assert diverse truths? Those proponents who claim to be skilled, are those truths actually many and diverse, or do they follow a line of reasoning? Truths surely are not many and diverse, except mistakenly perceiving permanent things in the world. But having formulated reasoning about views, they assert the dyad, truth and false. The seen, heard, good behavior and observances, the sensed, depend on these. He shows disdain based on a judgment. Derisive, he says, the opponent is a fool, unskilled. As he considers the opponent a fool, on the same grounds he describes himself as skilled, for of his own accord, claiming himself skilled, he disdains the other, speaking in the same way. So he gives a very long answer to this question. So again, here the Buddha is sort of circling back on the theme of the overall sutta here, which is he's really explaining how do we know anything, and how can we sort of filter the news or the information that we're receiving and the teachings that we're receiving, and how can we get to truth. So previously he has mentioned that we tend to see reality in terms of true or false when we start to understand it, when we try to understand the processes and the mechanisms of the way of the world. Somebody has an idea, they have a theory, they propose it, and they will sort of argue about why others are wrong and why their opinion is right. And they argue this as I'm right and you're wrong. This is true and this is false. He calls this a dyad, or a dialectic argument. So here again, he's dealing with a different aspect of why somebody would be perplexed, why they would be confused with listening to different teachers. Because from the listener's viewpoint, there's a diversity of truths. And when the proponents are very skilled in persuasive argument and so forth, then it's very hard to know what might be true and what what might not be true, and are there many diverse types of truth? Like as somebody once said recently, are there alternative facts? Is there alternative realities? So, you know, this is it's very understandable here that somebody would be perplexed. So the Buddha is cutting right through this, saying that truths surely are not many and diverse. And that it's, in fact, this whole way we go about assessing truth that is the problem. That we sort of think that we can approach truth by this kind of argumentative, rational sort of theorizing way, and that we can assert things into these dialectics of true and false. Whereas wisdom is actually seeing the paradoxical nature in things. It sees things as they really are. And one of the qualities and hallmarks of wisdom is that it is paradoxical. You can see both sides. So just as a coin has two faces on a coin, like money, there's a coin and it has two faces. And, you know, we normally say heads or tails, and we can flip the coin, and it's sort of a wise person sees that there's two faces to every coin. Whereas the fool is always saying it's heads, and another fool will argue, no, it's tails. Whereas the wise know that the nature of a coin is that it is both heads and tails. And I'll give another example, is that somebody I liked his writings very much was Solzhenitsyn, and he said that the division between good and evil is a line within our own heart. So he had suffered greatly in his own life. He had suffered difficult situations, different difficult conditions, and very, very difficult people. He had survived World War II. He survived the gulags. After he was put in the gulags, and he had this empathy for the people who did terrible things to him and to others around him, by saying, you know, do you realize that the line between good and evil is within your own heart? So when we say that somebody is good and we say that somebody else is bad, it's like, well, you know, are you seeing the head or the tail of the coin? Both good and bad exist in every situation, and they exist in every person. And so it's not that truth is many and diverse. It's that we formulate, and it's how we view things that's kind of problematic. So the seen, heard, good behaviors and observances, the sensed, depend on these. He shows disdain based on a judgment derisive. He says the opponent is a fool, unskilled. So it's this judging that's the problem. You know, it's this kind of judging and failing to see that there is both sides in every situation. There is both good and bad. There is both good and bad behavior. And we need to be kind of careful in our observations. And that's why in the path, it's not so much about what other people argue and think, because we will get lost in this thicket of views and opinions, whereas we have to find and discover for ourselves the path of wisdom within our own heart. And when we do, then we find that truth is one, and that truths are not many and diverse. And when we meet people who have, shall we say, alternative truths and alternative facts, we can kind of know that this person is foolish. And then the Buddha's general advice is to not argue with fools, because we can't guide them to wisdom. We can only show them the path, and they have to enlighten themselves. They have to liberate themselves. So the Buddha is a Tathagata, somebody who points the way. So as he considers the opponent a fool, on the same ground he describes himself as skilled. Of his own accord, claiming himself skilled, he disdains the other, yet speaks in the same way. So yeah, here again he's just repeating the point that the whole methodology is wrong. So that's why the emphasis in Buddhism is on the path. It's on this fourth noble truth, that there is a path and there's a training and there's a practice. And once it's pointed out to you what the pathway is, it's on you, the individual, to thread the path, to follow that path. And then the truth itself is self-revealing. As long as you're practicing in the correct way, then you see the truth for yourself. And it's not something that can be rationalized and debated with people who are not walking the path. Anyway, maybe that's just a few ideas on these three.
Can you point out the particular stanza that we are?
It's 886 in this.
886.
It's a question. Do you? It's page 808. 308.
Bhikkhu Bodhi?
Yeah, 308.
I am in the commentaries.
Yeah, you are in the commentary, yeah.
866.
308.
866.
886.
886.
Yeah. Page 308.
Thank you. Truth surely are not
many
and diverse, except by, within bracket, mistakenly, perceiving permanent things in the world. But having formulated the reasoning about views, they assert...
Starts on 885. Yeah, but why do they assert...
They are true and false. 885. But why do they assert diverse truths? Those proponents who claims to be skilled, are those truths actually many and diverse, or do they follow a line of reasoning? Tasmanu sachchani vadanti nana, kasmanu sachchani vadanti nana, pavadiyati ye kusala vadana, sachchani sutani bahuni nana, udahute takka manusaranti. Viruddhavadi nati sulabdei apima dakshayam kina ou kavarehein nana satyavadiya kyaide. Anyone who is saying opponent, but telling, I am the truth, I am the skill. Why these kind of people in the world have different kinds of truths, different kind of base? Own vivida nana vidha boho sattva yatsan laddahuda. The imaginary Buddha is asking from the Gautama the Buddha, truly they have different truths and listen to different truths. Or are they just in the argumenting or rationalizing or reasoning? This thing gave at the beginning fairly good background by Venerable Buddha Rakhita, and he himself gave another way of expressing the same for a person like me. If you are born lucky, you are an idiot. Because you don't understand suffering. You think the suffering is for them because they are idiots. I am lucky, therefore I am... So the gods are in that situation. So human beings, those who are aspiring gods, must think the gods are very united and they are with the truth and they are always forwarding, progressing. But looking at the gods, they are also fighting. How come that? I am trying to be a god and even go there... They are fighting. So therefore, they are in an utterly unsecurable, uncurable situation than human beings, those who have 50-50 suffering and the pleasure. So it happened to Buddha to raise a develop a platform for argumenting or for dialogue to tell them. But they are naturally better off. So Buddha Rakhita Venerable put... Even in the human world, there are born lucky people. And they are looking at others through the nose. They are inferior, we are superior. And inferior people look up to that. Are they telling only one truth? Are they in the coherent? Or they are unique? No, they are utter fools. They are also telling so much of bad things. So I learned that kind of a thing through the conspiracy theory. Because I am thinking that others are superior, I am born poor,
and I don't know. But I had no problem. I went through the education and ultimately I found there is a rut. I don't think by understanding the conspiracy theory, understanding their conflict, I gain something, I gain nothing. But the conspiracy theory told they are in utter fighting. They are achieved people, they are born lucky, or they achieved in the wrong way, maybe. So we have a question, why these rich people are talking nonsense, different things. They should be in one, because I am looking forward to go there. When I go there, am I at peace? No. Still they are fighting. And not only that, they are exploiting us. And for that they are unique. But within them, fighting. So normal Buddhists try to become God. They are praying God, then try to be God. But when you go there, it's a balupurayak. The dog fighting there. But the Buddha is looking from the different angle. This is not for the commoners. This is for born lucky people. So there was a best-selling book, I can't remember, Why Good People Are Arguing. Can you remember the book? Why Good People Are Diversified. We think good people must be unique. Because we are looking forward that we are going to go there. When you go there, we find the fighting. We find the balupurya. And that question is only the Buddha can understand. Because we think the day we go to the rich world, we go to the heavenly world, then we go to the, there will be everything okay. No. They are still in the bhava. They are still fighting. Then the imaginary Buddha is asking, does that indicate that there are different kind of multifaceted truths? Oh, they are misled by argumenting. So no simple answer. It's a long answer. That's why this sutta is so long. And we have come up to, the sutta is starting from 882, according to my numbering. And now we are in the 889. And Bhikkhu Bodhi is 866. There's a slight difference. And Kasmanu Satchani Vadanti Nana. Why the truths are different? Pavadiyaye Kutala Vadana. Those who gone up to that, this is a skillful way. My way is skillful. But they are talking different truths. Satchani Sutani Bahuni Nana. If the truth is diversified, Udahu te takka manusaranti, otherwise they are just going by argumenting or deductive knowledge or inferential knowledge. So the Buddha is the one to answer this. Another Buddha is the only can raise the question because it is irrelevant for us. Our problem is the bread is too expensive now. Petrol has scarcity. No gas. No jobs. And rupee is floating. What to do? But you look at the highest people having the dollar printing people, exactly the same question. Are we to go into this first world country, the new world order? That is what look at the sarcastically by the conspiracy theorist. I am not telling conspiracy is a Buddha. But they show us we must not understand we are poor, we are deprived, we are down, but we are truth-wise, we all are in the same boat. We are same in the danger, but we are lucky. We don't have exploitation. We don't have to profess something because Buddha has already professed. We are just following simply, of course, we are arguing. That argument is not for gain grounds, nothing. We can argue. So yesterday also we had the heated argument. And after shaking hands, we told we'll meet tomorrow morning for the discussion. Yes, definitely we are meeting, whether rain or not. So our argument is how much a Buddha has to create another Buddha to ask why born lucky people are arguing. Why born lucky people are talking different truths. So then deprived people, what to do? So some communist lecturers came for our degree and the postgraduate degree level. They say, yes, Western people come and talking about the central economy. Bullshit. They are exploiting us. They explode into our forest and killed it and go for the tea rubber coconut planting. We don't have something to eat. Our people go and doing the service to the planting manager. So we agriculturists, ultimately went to, I mean, this is government policy for the Mahavali. going back to the paddy cultivation, and ultimately funded by the foreign, the big money people. And 35-year programs reduced into 5-year accelerated program. It is debuckling our situation. And then later we got so much of funds that is not for the agricultural production, that's for the other facilities, we have to pay the interest. So we are in a completely in a ruining situation. And exactly the same so-called the first world country. So Buddha has to come and say, mind your own business. They are talking different truths. That does not indicate truths are diversified. They are on argument, in their own deductive knowledge, their own inferential knowledge. So how to discriminate the truth and the inferential knowledge? Bahusuta jnana, chintame jnana, bhavaname jnana. So our discussion is to understand the gradual order and to give attention as much as for the bhavana, but you must have inferential knowledge. You must have why people are taking different truths, why they are teaching us in the university hidden agenda. We are utterly misled. University staff, incurable. But they never get promotion unless otherwise they teach the hidden curriculum. But lucky enough, India got the idea. They taught to hidden language, hidden curriculum, their own Sanskrit culture. Sri Lanka failed. We are waiting the Oxford scholarships, Harvard University scholarships, and then we are better off. They bring unwanted diseases to Sri Lanka. They bring unwanted habituation to Sri Lanka. And the children are looking forward. And I am lucky, my all degrees and everything is local, taught by the local people, they are misled people. Luckily, my father is a farmer. I did farming. We had the sustainable development, or the, how do you call it, economy. There are no excess for us. Very balanced. And when I go there, still, why we are looking for the postgraduate? Why we are looking for that professors? They are not down to earth. Not a single professor in Sri Lanka. Not a single professor. You say, looking forward the Western method, the hidden curriculum as the idol. They are different. Some people are communist. They never teach communism in the universities. It's banned. Only the capitalistic system. That is what they call the hidden curriculum. Can we different? Can we change? And we, of course we can change. Sri Lankan Communist Party is not happy about having different universities. If they are going to have different universities, the Muslim people come and teach, they are Muslim, and the communist people come and teach, why should we go for only the capitalist system? Kohlberg is questioning it. America is not investing money on education. They are exploiting from others. We people born, learn, and the brain drain, we go to America. And even without going to America, we can get the computer jobs. So these truths, useless, but you have to understand. They have argumenting, they have their minuous objectives behind. But the truth is there. We can't go to the truth as far as this cloud is there. Because our mind is completely puddled for the education and imposed ethics, imposed curriculum. That is not our curriculum, that is not our blood. Our blood is our own agriculture, our own system that has been completely, Ayurveda completely ruined. And the earth, earning something from the earth, the backyard garden, everything gone. We are now going to the supermarket. We says we don't have a three-wheeler to go to the supermarket. We don't have enough money to buy the Kiehl's products. They are killing animal and doing all the kind of thing. And those who can in Colombo are very happy. No problem. So I don't think we can come back. We can understand the truth, what the Buddha mentioned. But you have to understand, whatever we are fighting, it is by someone's agenda. We are not our liberated path. That is why I told in the singular discussion, I met number of young Samaneras when I go to Kandy. for the last two times, I just ask simply, why you become a monk? They don't know. You are learning Pali, why? Now I'm going to teach you and sit with you, meditation for what? They don't know. And their teacher came, then I told that is what explained in the Hathaway report. Not a single monk have any idea of in this very life. Hathaway reports indicate 365 year number of Buddhist organizations, so-called hardcore, all lost the idea. They are not for enlightenment. And the last time I teach them, I told, remember, can you are paying offering to the teacher, what do you ask? Sabbadukka nisaran nibbana sacca karanatta. Ah, Bhante, that I know. This time I go there and ask. I am going to ask the same question. This time came only three samaniras. Why you are becoming a monk? To search about nibbana. So another person told to realize nibbana. Another monk told to search. Then I told, searching about Nibbana is Buddha's work. It is done. It's a great thing. You can't do it. Now it's a realization. And then came out with, they have by heart, Satipatthana Sutta, early part, and they wanted to demonstrate. So I told, why not? We don't know. We are getting completely misled by this hidden curriculum and by this thing, I mean. They are not very serious things, but you have to look through, you have to see through. Our whole effort is to be here and now. Our whole effort is to be understand in this very life. And then we can get another shadow of Mahayana, not this in this very life, but fighting with Hinduism, fighting with other, and they are very good. We are talking about the Samatha is the best. Because you can have your own peace here and now, and you can fight. So I read enough, as much as possible, Mahayana books. They are talking about the nihilism. They are talking about the argumentation. And they are giving a good fight with the Hinduism, but ultimately Hinduism is overcoming. Theravada never went to fight with Hinduism. But there's a truth. But all the other academic people, all the theoreticians misled us. To make ourselves lucky people, whenever we become lucky, we lost the target. That's why they wanted to, they are talking about our development. What development? Bullshit. That is not the development. And I was thinking about the Bhutan. Now Bhutan also in a recession. I thought about the Finland. The Finland Prime Minister got caught. She has to go now. I mean, they have done a lot of good education, but it is not working. And England is going to declare a mindful nation for 35 years. What is the politics in England now? What is the progress even with mindfulness? National policy mindfulness is something different. But you can be mindful, even the India collapse, even the Sri Lanka collapse, you can be mindful. That is the truth. But other things, the inferential, very colorful, very lucrative, and you can spend your whole life leading nowhere. So therefore, we have to understand this absolute truth, so-called, and this the social and popular truth, and the failure. So these three levels you have to understand. So we can understand theoretical level, inferential level, and the meditation level. So therefore, as Verily you mentioned, it's a long answer. This question is difficult. You're born lucky. That is the curse. That's the bad omen. So therefore, Buddha is born lucky person. He renounced and went behaved like a beggar. And a lot of people from the different social classes came and enlightened because their aim is to get enlightened. Now, after the first 20 years of the Buddha, he institutionalized, accepting the places and teachers and everything. That's the point where they started the corruption. Now, religion is going according to the religious history by Max Weber. He says, more and more you get materialistic, this thing, you lose the object. Your personal this thing and the Buddha's real truth. Lucky enough, you have Sutta Nipata. Again, Buddha taking you around and say, hey, darling, that Buddha is talking with another Buddha. taking the God as audience, it is shooting you at heart, aimed at your heart. So therefore we have to understand all the camouflage, also understand all the messy and the puddled and the clouded situation. I mean, they are not serious. You can go through. So Wednesday I had a discussion with Venerable Dhammika. I mean, he was giving a talk and I am talking with him. I told Bhante, I am very sorry, very thank you for you, because after 40 years ago, I never thought about the conspiracy theory. I never thought about the hidden curriculum. But he told, please don't carry it away by others. Believe your mindfulness. You are an utter fool. You have no morality. Never mind. And Vinny Siriamang came and told, morality is the first, it must be perfect, then only the Samatha, and then only the Vipanya. Then I am sorry, Bhante, Venerable Dhammika is there to rescue me, ask him, when I go to him, I have broken all the precepts. He knows. Now I am very happy. I am happy that day by day I am becoming a cultured person, little by little, due to thank you, you all. So that background is very important. Lucky that the Buddha Rakkhita Amudro gave the background. So I just wanted to tell basically the born lucky idea and why lucky people argue. And later he touched fairly about the boundaries. We create boundaries due to the duplicate truths, not with the first truth. When as far as we have the duplicate truth, hidden curriculum and conspiracy, we have to understand we have diversification, not the sectarianism. So Ken Wilber wrote a book about no boundaries. I am not telling Ken Wilber is the Buddha, but it is enlightening for a person like me, because I was thinking I am a Sri Lankan, I am a born Buddhist, I am a Mahayana and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately they misled us. Venerable Dhammika coming from Australia, he told you bloody fool. So therefore the boundaries that happen when the breath is disappearing. In-breath and out-breath boundaries disappearing. And your mindfulness is spreading. But you think mindfulness is decaying. Because the boundaries are losing. Then you psychiatrically become vulnerable. Because your ego idea is dissolving. No one can withstand it. Lay people have so much responsibilities and multitasking, so they have. Even a monk, when they are going to the no-boundary situation, everything becomes blur, everything becomes flux-like, everything becomes vomitish, everything becomes nauseatic. No one can go through, because they are puddled by the different argumenting. They have hidden agenda for that. But the truth is existing, beyond Buddha. And are we using all these to see through this puddle situation? Of course, we must have different ideas with the different people. And alternative truths are available as far as in the inferential knowledges are concerned. Deductive knowledges are concerned. But still the truth is there. Now the clouded situation. But the sun is there. You can't imagine the sun. For the last 7 days it was covered. But the clouds are not thick layer. If you take a plane and go above the cloud, it's a hot sun. Sun is there. But we declared, please get out from the low-lying areas, floods can happen. It is a truth. Listen. But it is not to go to Nibbana. So this kind of understanding, we being monks, we have to have a sharp dialogue. We have to have a, how do you call, argumenting or rational knowledge, but understand it is not about the ultimate truth. It is about our belief, our argument. You are wrong, I am correct. So that much we accept. We are coming from different countries and learning from the, talking from the learned language. For me, I am happy to be as a member here. So therefore, this alternative truth, and we have different argumenting and different even the rich people and the good people argue because insecurity. They wanted to prove mine is the correct, despite the final truth. The Sutta Nipati is ultimately showing you, hey darling, this is halfway truth. what is called, when Jnana they use another term, Ardha Satya, halfway truth. But the truth is existing. We argument is not to kill each other and denounce the other thing, but argumenting only we understand this camouflage, this hidden curriculum and the conspiracy theories, they are just puddling our mind. But we must see through what the Buddha is telling, and you have to go beyond that. Beyond the Buddha, understand the truth. That is what I would like to share at this juncture.
Vasarai Bhante, thank you to everyone who has spoken for their wonderful comments. Yeah, as I think I have mentioned before, a true mark of wisdom is when you're able to be sure of what you're doing, but you're also able to respect that other people may not share that opinion, meaning that you don't feel the need to debate them about it or, you know, get into long, pointless arguments with them about it. Because, I mean, you can argue all day. You can argue 4 days, even. But where is that going to go, you know? A lot of the time when people change their views, actually, I would say pretty much all the time when people change their viewpoints on something, they do it out of their own will. And it's, I mean, you can make somebody see something, or you can help them to see something. You can give advice to somebody, or you can tell them something. Well, you know, based on my knowledge of this sutta, this is what this actually means and stuff like that. And they might say, oh, okay, that's right. But still, they're kind of doing it out of their own free will. So they might be agreeing with you, but the idea that you can like you know, react to somebody or, you know, lash out at somebody or start an argument with them, and mainly that's coming from a desire to get somebody to see the error in their ways, or an incorrect interpretation they have or a mistake they made. And It's more from a conceited desire to get this person to see what you don't like that is coming from them. So a true mark of wisdom, though, is being able to understand that pretty much there are so many different ways of thinking in the world and so many different ideas. And a true mark of wisdom is being able to see that, you know, most people in the world have different ideas. Even people who are similar, you know, in their beliefs, they're still going to differ in at least, a few beliefs here and there on certain things. So being able to see that most people in the world have different ideas and, maybe making a point about certain things at times when the time is right and when you can say it in the right way, but not having a selfish or conceited desire to correct everyone on what you feel is the error in their ways. I mean, even if it's wrong, you know, most of the time, as I was saying, you know, a lot of the time people, if they do change their viewpoints or opinions about things, it's out of their own free will, at least to an extent, you know. So, you know, just understanding that everyone in the world, most people in the world have different viewpoints, and not having this desire to force everyone to be exactly like you, and just being able to respect that. And from that, you know, you'll see that you actually live a lot more harmoniously in the world with other people. And even if you completely disagree with their viewpoints, it never gets to the point of where you're thinking like, I want to kill this person for their beliefs and stuff. Like, you know, that's how like wars start and whatnot, is people, you know, there are two sides that have two different opinions about something, about how to run the world or whatever, and then they start fighting over it because they can't respect that this group of people, they have a certain idea about how to run things, and we have our ideas about how to run things, but that's not good enough. We need to make these people follow our way, and if, you know, they don't want to do that, then we'll start a war with them or something like that. That's how these kind of violent conflicts start, and conflicts in general start. So that is the comment that I have.
I would like to comment that that is why the non-coercive, the non-reactive approach in mindfulness. And we are also arguing that for war, not for the war. We are not going to kill each other. We for to brainstorming. You are coming from different cultures, and that is very good, healthy. And we are not arguing over the ultimate truth. We are everyone accept it. But we also have vehement argumenting. It is not to disprove someone, but to brush ourselves. So therefore, our argumenting must be a continuous one, not the conclusive one telling you are correct, you are wrong. That is Venerable Jnanaponika is putting in the power of mindfulness, non-coercive nature, apanna kapatipada, non-reaction. So it's a very difficult, it's such a restraint. I am arguing with him, but I know tomorrow morning we are meeting. And that was not conclusive. Argument is happening, so therefore that non-coercive thing was a very, very wonderful thing for me, coming from a village and going to junior cities, meeting different people, different cultures. I found that I can adjust as far as I am non-coercive. Apannaka patipada, and that is highly appreciated in mindfulness, non-reaction. Thank you for your comment.
Avasarai Bhante, and Avasarai from the Sangha. Bhante, I think it's a small view of mine about what you first said, that being born lucky is sort of like a curse in the present generation. But I was reading The Broken Buddha by Venerable Dhammika, and in the book he talks about in today's world where Buddhism is say at its peak, and the Sangha receives a lot of offerings and a lot of devotion from the laity. And if you consider a situation in like Sri Lanka or say Myanmar or Thailand, where many young children born into very poor families, although they are not born lucky, their mothers often put them into monkhood because they view monkhood as a lap of luxury compared to the situation they were in before, whereas they had no food, they had no clothing and no proper shelter. So I sort of feel like in today's age, if a person who does not have the correct aim of attaining Nibbana enters into monkhood, it could sort of become a lap of luxury for him, because in a lot of places, we do not see the four requisites being less. To be more accurate, food, lodgings, shelters, and basically the four requisites, the lay people are always ready to support the Sangha by providing them. Even during the hard times Sri Lanka faces right now, we can see it in abundance. So I feel like even if you're born in a poor or poverty situation right now, if you do not have the correct vision in mind, entering into monkhood can sidestep you even further than being a lay person. And I just wanted to share it and know your opinion regarding it, Bhante.
I, being a senior monk, I know many parents are happy to give the children, but senior monks abuse them. They don't give enough four requisites. That is fairly happening in Kandy and Colombo, because senior monks can't go beyond the rights of the children. But you go to the remote areas, it's pathetic. They don't get enough food, and they don't give enough rights. But they are like cattle farming or sheep. They're just following. But the parents do not consider it. I ask their parents, by giving the children to the this thing, have you been in the temple? Have you been in one day in a meditation atmosphere or retreat? No. So ultimately the children, they can't talk. Mauvaru athi nathi, piyavaru dakka nathi, daruvan kiyak meyyahito. Either they go to the school. They have not seen a father. So there is no father. And they have not seen the mother. And what a kind of weight in these children, they can't express it. And we are asking to learn mathematics, drawings. What a heavy mind. And the Demapiyange Nopanath Kangala Vandikevanne Podidaru. Fathers and mothers, they play hell. And the adverse childhood experience, ultimately the child has to suffer. That is the school system. That's the today the monkhood system. But the last talk with Venerable Dhammika, he told, still I love Sri Lanka. This is my second motherland. Because, you know, these can't help. The young children are given and they are being abused. Very bad. Situation is very bad. I am telling openly, I am a senior monk. But I have never been exposed to such because I ordained at age 36. So therefore, don't think. Yesterday also I found a YouTube, the young children are being ordained for 4 requisites. But the elderly monks, they are not giving a democratic and division of labor and transparency. Young children don't know how to ask for rights. But imagine if they become mindful, one moment, they become kings. And they can't go to mindfulness because it is not being given. I am not telling that everyone can be mindful. But when they become mindful, they say, beyond 4 requisites, beyond their parents' objectives, beyond their coming to the temple, there is some truth, a sign of truth. So therefore, school children, present day, early morning, parents go to the, send it to the school, and they say it's a matter of school. At the house, parents are play hell. What to do? They can't talk. Because teachers, government school teachers, 86% depressed, tension. They become, the children are a burden for them. But private schools, tuition masters, no. They know how to earn from them. Parents are very happy. And recently, one mother brought a young boy, 20-odd years, he don't know how to write. Has gone to a private school, very prestigious. He is making a love with the mother's telephone, one famous actress. He says, my whole heart is there. My younger brother is not happy with that. Mother is not happy with that. Bante, please. That's all I know. He can't write. He can't read a novel. Gone to private school. So these things we have to understand by common education system, by common monkhood, it won't answer. We have to individually, we have to take care. But how the hell have so much of energy to take care about one by one? Difficult. So therefore we can't generalize it. The Western culture, Eastern culture, monkhood and the lay situation, educated and uneducated. But there's one teacher coming from the master training program. He put a web and see how are the depressed children and adverse childhood experience. He also very fairly young, middle class. He says some children, they have their own initiative. They have their own way of thinking, not to make an impediment from the childhood abuse. By lack of food, they cut through. They are the one can understand mindfulness. We went to the prison. And there were some people, really, of course, they have house problems, psychological problems, and creating problems with children. They can catch because they know how to find a reason to be happy. This is not in this very life. They are born with adverse situation. They are not taking the negative. They cut through. And they are genius. I don't know. Now I am thinking about, are we only addressing these people, are taking and get the advantage for the Satipasala? Or try to understand the failed children, and some people successful, some people are born lucky, some people are born poor, and we have to find a social survey technique. Why mindfulness is working for some children, why not for others? Why many of the master trainers, they don't understand mindfulness? They are teaching. That become another hidden curriculum. The mindfulness is now coming up to that. I take the example of UK. They want to make the mindful nation. You see, Britics and political chaos. And ultimately, after the Union, the Russian-Ukraine war, they found the deep state is in the Russian hands now. Because all the big properties are purchased by Russia in the hard core of London. Because Margaret Thatcher made the external people come and get the golden visa. And Sri Lanka also now going to introduce golden visa. Because we need dollars. And then what happened to our culture? So these things came due to this Russian war. And because ultimately Russia also investing money in the capitalistic system. So these the things. So children, very, very unfortunate, but still there are some sharp people, they can cut through. And I think, earlier I thought mindfulness can do blanket coverage. No, they can understand the power of mindfulness. They can understand how to make use the opportunity of suffering to the truth of suffering. And some people get succumbed to the situation, they get smashed. So therefore, when you are be mindful, try to teach someone, at least one person, and see, some are making use and they know the how to use the suffering in order to understand the truth of suffering, not to find fault with the capitalism, not to find fault with the communism, not to find fault with the masters and the born lucky or born poor. They are trivial. That trivialness is you are born with, not the happiness, not the luckiness. You are born with, that is called Medhavi. You are born lucky. There are three kind of knowledges. The opening balance, and what you are learning and come up to this thing, and meditation. The opening balance is very important. That is what you call the caste system, not the Indian caste system. So by interacting each other, we find we had kind of a cutting through knowledge. Some, whatever the impediments happen, they cut through. That is very, very clear when we are finding the advancement of the Satipasala. So I just wanted to introduce Sampajanya. Sati can't do. Sati is a paralyzed thing. It is a Sati is a blind. Energy is there, blind. But the Sampajanya must be there. Then only you can understand when a difficulty happens, how to cut through, how to understand the truth of suffering rather than cursing the creator, cursing the conspiracies, cursing the capitalism. Cursing the West, cursing our deep state. No. They are just erasable. They are not permanent ink. They are the erasable.
Absarai Swaminansa. I just wanted to introduce an idea that I learned a long time ago to give a general idea of what this idea is about. And what I had heard was that the explosion of religious seeking, spiritual seeking, occurred as a reaction to the fact that there was a growth of this sort of people acquiring riches due to being able to accumulate more, like more grain. They were able to form kingdoms, and then this turned out, you know, to end up people became enslaved, and there are wars, and so there's this sort of bad cultural thing that was happening, which was money. Coming into being and fighting, and that spiritual seeking was a response to that, was a sort of like, I would think of it as like a counterculture to try to find the truth that's without, you know, to avoid this problem of people fighting and having. Once you, another form of fighting is to form opinions and to get other people to agree with you, and so that you're bringing others over into your camp. And so I just wanted to acknowledge this this idea that I believe is true, and that right now we're still obviously still subject to this problem, and so in a way, you know, Buddhism is not only a way of seeking the ultimate truth, but it's also a way to live in a counterculture that isn't reliant or doesn't put value in money or getting other people to believe what you believe or anything like this. So this is an idea I wanted to...
That is exactly what I learned through the conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theory want to have the universal government, everyone must be socialized, you must not be one to yourself. So David Icke says, I am me, I am free. No money, no society, no culture. Because it's a cancer. They want to have come up to take into your camp. You will give you anything. Once you go on there, you are an utter slave. They just ignore them. You become the peace or just a drop in their camp. I don't wish to have that. So the civilization is a cancer. Money is a cancer. Marriage life is a cancer. So the Buddha, when the Buddha is appearing, the civilization was already in progress. And money is in progress. Marriage life is, he appreciated it. But he told, go to forest, be unto yourself, appamatto, vupakatto, appamadu. So it's a revolution. It's a silent revolution to the social system. That's what you call the monk. That's what the ajiva caste. That is what you call the ascetic. They are revolutionizing. We are one man army. Why should we go to this camp or that camp? But this is the only thing, or if I am to reduce, conspiracy theory told me, there's a soft weapons and the hard weapons. Soft weapon is education. Giving scholarships. And lucky enough, I am not a good person to get a Fulbright or get five scholarships, nothing. I am in a normal class. And the conspiracy they told, this is a racket. You have been organized, you have been regimented 20 years before. No way out. Such a dirty thing of the so-called lucky people, or 1% of Americans. I'm sorry to tell the country. 1%? 1%, you don't know.
1%
what? The top class people. Untouchables. Untouchables. They call untouchables. Yeah, Wall Street. You don't know. So that is why. Huh? Pardon me? Yeah. Yeah. I look at. Yeah. Yeah. I am telling the Sri Lankan elite group. Yeah. Sri Lankan elite group is much worse than American elite. I learned this viewpoint through conspiracy. Otherwise, we are looking forward to become the first 1%. Lucky enough, we are in the middle class. And they have been well explained, well expressed in the conspiracy. Before, I had no this kind of ideology or argumenting or reading. After a while, I thought that's fairly, that idea is with me. I don't like socialization. I don't like civilization. I don't like the technological development. I don't like infrastructure development. Because you are losing, you become extrovert. But you can't. Without that. So you have to understand the relationship. You have to understand the proportion. That is the matter. It is also evolving. By arguing, so therefore, deep state is everywhere. That is called Patale in Sri Lankan. That's called Mara. So there is no place, there is no Mara. The present technology is giving them weapons. Make the people elite. They call untouchables. India untouchables is low caste people. But the Wall Street people, untouchable. So that I attribute to the conspiracy theories, but I am not a vehement follower for the moment, but I have all the books and I am see what is happening. That viewpoint, it is something against the civilization. But still, commenting is, I am me, I am free. I am telling, be mindful and mind your own business.
Vasudai Mahatheru, Vasudai Mahasangha. Thank you, everyone, for the comments. yes, just to maybe conclude on Venerable Dhamma Jiva Bhante's point. I think the Buddha's revolution and his path of liberation of virtue, meditation, and wisdom. I think those who have genuinely followed it as best as they can and hopefully to the very end have found that naturally they just kind of don't want to engage in arguments and disputes, especially of the nature of views and things, because it just, I feel like there's this kind of feeling that it's just not so virtuous. It really like brings up unwholesome qualities. It really disturbs the peace of mind, so it makes it hard to meditate. And when one does develop that wisdom, then they can see how all these views are really just dependent and conditioned anyways, and they're not anything ultimate and worth fighting over. So, yeah, I support that we all also follow that path of sila, samadhi, panya, and mind our own business, because then we can just avoid all this foolishness of the world and see our own foolishness so that we can grow wise. So thank you, everyone.
So towards that, Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw says, of course they are inferential, of course they are deductive, you must be thorough on that in order to get rid of that. Otherwise you will stop at that level thinking that's the final truth. But we have the final truth, we have the camouflage with this deductive knowledge and the inferential, they are very lucrative. Argumenting and thought-provoking and brainstorming, but you get stuck. So therefore in a discussion, we must not avoid arguing and the inferential. They are very, very interesting because we come from the different cultures, but don't have a camp there. Don't stay there. Just see through. And I think today we are very in the heated in the rainy climate. Very good discussion. And I suggest to sum up at that level point. If there are someone is still having some ideas, we can have 1 or 2 minutes.
I'll just bring it back to an example I had of this kind of discussion with a bunch of devas. I had this experience of being invited to teach meditation at a company. And the founders of this company had come from a very working class background in Scotland. They were just very bright people, and they had gotten scholarships or, because of their where they were born, they could get access to universities. So from how they spoke, their accent, I knew these are very working class background guys, and they had become mathematicians, and they had they had started this company of where they check the books. That's what they do. They just check numbers. So they're employed by very large companies to check their books, to double check their own accountants. How do you know that if you own a company, how do you know that the people who report to you are telling you the right numbers? Well, sometimes you have to hire a separate company to double check your own books. So when these guys would find a mistake, then they would kind of crucify that person within that person's company, So they were kind of like guard dogs, watchdogs. And so I was being invited to talk to them and give them a meditation and stuff like that. So after the meditation, they said to me, "Oh, you seem like a bright enough fellow. Why are you a monk?" As if I was brain damaged because you'd be a monk. Like, if you were smart, you should be making lots of money. So I said, I know how to make money, just like you know how to make money. So you can see that I can make money and I can see that you are making money. Then what? So you own a car, you own a house, you have a family, you have kids, and they're all going to this nice school. Then what? Oh, you move to a bigger house, you get a bigger car, you get a different model wife, and your kids go to an even more posh school. And then what? And then what? These guys had come from the bottom of the ladder to being very wealthy. And I'm saying to them, and then what? Then what? So you have a million. What? Then what? Do you have 10 million? Then you have 100 million. Then what? You know, I had a boss in Singapore. He had four wives. Wife one, wife two, wife three, wife four. They weren't divorced. You're really posh if you have that much money to have four houses, four cars, four wives, four golf clubs. You know, he was involved in. He was that rich, that powerful. They call it tauge. It's like a tycoon. Then what? What? You get five wives? You get six wives? You get seven wives? Like if you're an emperor in China, you have 10,000 wives? You know, then what? You know, you sometimes you have to kind of take that rational argument to the ridiculous. You know, because it gets ridiculous of like, yeah, it is silly, you know. And the only escape is this way out through the middle way, you know. And... You know,
you have to read the Ganaka Moggallana Sutta.
Huh?
Ganaka Moggallana Sutta, it is given to the accountants.
Okay.
Yeah. Buddha given.
So I'm just letting you know, like, all this rationalization, it you know, then what? You know, you're right, and you're right, then what?
You just know? Like asking the who created God. God created everything. Who is the first
Yeah,
cause?
Then what? Who, you know? Is this the beginning? Is this the end? Then what? You know what I mean? Like, what happened before this cycle? Then what? What happened? What will happen after this one? Then what? You know, so...
It's a very destructive question.
In a good way, you know, sometimes you have to surrender and, you know...
So he's good for monks. He's good
arguing.
For monks, but not for the medium-class executives. They want to become high-class executives. Then what is not a good question, it is an impediment. For the monks, you can have that argument.
Yeah, sure, but I don't care. I'm not trying to get their service
the higher
or their
executive.
Donation or blah, blah, blah. You know...
Only 1 minute. You have to look at the clock.
It's a very short example just to add on to that. I think that what comes to mind, a very fond story that I like, that relates to that same question, but given to monks who practice, are once when Ajahn Chah was in a monastery and he was kind of sewing this robe very quickly, and he was like really sweaty and almost bleeding because he was poking his fingers with the needle. He was trying to sew this robe very quickly because he wanted to go and meditate. So the head teacher of the monastery came and he's like, what are you doing? Why are you so rushing through that robe? And he just said, well, I want to go meditate. And he said, okay, what will you do after that? And he's like, I'll go do this. And he's like, okay, well, what about after that? Well, I guess I'll do that. And he then meditate. Okay, after that, what will you do? So he just kept going. What will you do? And then what? And then what? And then finally Ajahn Chah kind of realized, and the teacher said, even right now, you have craving in your mind and you don't see it. That is where your suffering is coming from.
Yeah.
So
that kind of the burst opening to the present moment. Enough. Thank you very much. So we are going to go for Pindapata. Thank you very much for the participation. We will be meeting, hopefully, in the next week also.